And this is not a quiz.
I'm being honest. I have had a review session with Dwayne.
Yes.
That's a little weird.
The Senate bill seems really straightforward.
A little weird.
And they wouldn't about the 234?
Yeah.
Well, I have a question.
Oops, goodness. I'm late. Sorry. We're on. Let's open the meeting of the House Committee on Land Use for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2009. And let's begin by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 234. Our first Senate bill. Colleagues? Senate Bill 234. We're about to get our summary of.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill allows service of an appeal of a land use board of appeals decision by first class mail.
Who? Dicey policy question, ladies and gentlemen.
You never know.
This was brought by the department, I believe. No. Oh.
Oregon State Bar.
Oh, the Oregon State Bar. Mr. Crane, would you like to speak to the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Crane. I'm a land use attorney practicing in Portland. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar. And we are here to ask your support for Senate Bill 234. Senate Bill 234 addresses, frankly, a very minuscule distinction between two statutes for how you take an appeal to the Court of Appeals. If you're in Marion County Circuit Court or Jefferson County Circuit Court and you get a decision from the court and you want to appeal that to the Court of Appeals, you can serve the other parties by registered mail, certified mail, or first class mail. However, if you get a decision from Lubin and you want to appeal that to the Court of Appeals, you have to serve on the other parties by registered or certified mail. If you do it by first class mail, the statute says it's jurisdictional, the requirements are jurisdictional, and you lose. And believe it or not, this went all the way to the Supreme Court, the Oregon Supreme Court, in the case of Walmart versus City of Central Point. Walmart got a decision out of Luba they didn't like. They appealed it to the Court of Appeals and served the other parties by first-class mail with a copy of the appeal petition. Didn't realize the mistake within the 21-day appeal period. There was no question that the other parties got served, but the Court of Appeals looked at it and said, gosh, the statute says that's jurisdictional. I know you actually got service of it, but because it wasn't served by registered or certified mail, we don't have jurisdiction. Case dismissed. And the Oregon Supreme Court upheld that. So we think it's a malpractice trap. Frankly, you can have very experienced trial lawyers who take appeals to the Court of Appeals all the time, and if they have a land use decision, they're going to appeal it in the same way they appeal every other decision and serve the other parties by first-class mail and discover to their shock and chagrin and their clients' shock and chagrin that they lose. So this bill would amend the appeal statute from Luba decisions to allow parties to serve the other side by first-class mail as well as certified and registered mail. And that's the dicey policy issue before you today.
It is pretty out there, Mr. Crane.
Yeah.
Thank you. Questions of the witness?
Yes.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you.
That's what we call a technicality.
The description you gave of that happening, what would happen in the case had City of Central Point not received the mail?
The outcome would have been the same because the person appealing the decision chose to serve them by first-class mail. So it doesn't matter if they got it or it got lost in mail and they never got it. The person serving them chose the wrong service method.
Okay, thank you. So I understand that part. So now let's fast forward. We pass this bill and they do it the proper method, which would now be by first-class mail, and they don't receive it.
It would become an evidentiary question. I think usually these things include what's called a certificate of service on the back. The last page is usually a statement by the lawyer that I hereby testify that I put this in the mail on a certain date and sent it to, and they'll give the name and address. And if the other side didn't receive it, the court would probably allow them time to get the would extend the period for responding to the complaint to allow them time to receive it, analyze it, find a lawyer, draft a response, that kind of thing. So as long as it was served on time and not received for no through no fault of the receiving party, the court would allow them time to respond.
And just follow up. And just because I'm not an attorney, but receiving a appeal judgment, would that be the final notice of that action?
The final notice of the action is actually, I'll use LUBA as an example, but it would apply equally in circuit court. The final notice of the action comes from LUBA itself in the form of a written opinion, and it'll say at the bottom or at the top, final order, and be signed and dated. And that then starts the clock for the appeal period. But there is only one notice of appeal, so if you, for example, didn't like the decision you got from LUBA, and I was on the other side, mm-hmm. we both get a copy of the decision, final decision from LUBA. You file an appeal of that with the circuit court and send me a copy of your appeal. And that's the only notice of the appeal I would get, although if I didn't get that, I'm going to soon start getting mail from the Court of Appeals and wonder what's going on.
Madam Chair. Okay. After the petition is served, then there would be a briefing schedule to follow, wouldn't there?
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, in land use cases, the statute and the Oregon Rules of Appellate Procedure set out the briefing schedule because there's an expedited schedule at the Court of Appeals. The notice of appeal starts those timelines. But the court has discretion to waive those timelines if, for example, one party didn't get their appeal notice in time. But when the court receives the notice of appeal, they send the parties notice. Here's the title of the case. Here's the case number for all of your subsequent pleadings. So, for example, if the city of Central Point didn't get the mail notice, they're going to start getting mail from the Court of Appeals. Here's your case number. Here's your briefing schedule. They're going to say, what is this? Pick up the phone, and it will take them all of, you know, a minute and a half to figure out what's going on.
Follow-up,
Representative.
And given the first description, the scenario you laid out, that it went to the Oregon Supreme Court and they upheld the ruling because they used the wrong method, are we doing this bill because it's a fiscal issue, or is there a quantity of these things? I mean, does it happen a lot?
It does not happen a lot, frankly. You know, land use is a fairly specialized area of law, and most of the practitioners practice there all of the time. But the Oregon State Bar is concerned about it because we think it is a malpractice trap. You could get a very experienced lawyer who has a lot of trial experience, they get a land use case, and think that it can be appealed to the Court of Appeals in the same way as any other decision of a lower court. And then they find out that because of this little anomaly buried deep in the land use statutes, that you can't serve the notice petition, the notice of the appeal on the other parties in the same way you would. And, I mean, that's exactly what happened to the lawyers for Walmart in that case. And they, you know, could not believe, and I'm sure Walmart was pretty surprised to discover that simply by mailing it the wrong method, because you didn't send it by certified mail, your appeal is invalid. I'm reasonably certain that they had a long conversation with their attorneys about that, and we would like to avoid that happening again.
So this bill would put appeals of LUBA decisions on the same notification requirements or mm-hmm. permissions as other appeals
to the Court of Appeals.
That's right.
We're standardizing the appeals
process. That's the word I was
across different jurisdictions. So whether you're practicing in the circuit court or LUBA, I believe the appeals from the tax court are those go directly to the Supreme Court. So that doesn't. But at any rate, we're standardizing the appeals process across LUBA and the circuit court
to the Court of Appeals.
That's right.
Whether it comes from district court or from LUBA.
That's right.
Does that help? Anybody else? Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The only real concern I have is you may open a can of worms here with not doing your job when you say, well, the court can reopen that, you can get an attorney, and then you can go forward with this if the time frame has expired. Because if you said that I sent this and it doesn't show up, how do you prove that you sent it?
You've got a certified statement with your signature on it that you put it in the mail at a certain time. So either you signed that, you know, you shouldn't have signed that, or it's accurate. And the other thing is, as I say, as a practical matter, everybody who is a party is going to start getting mail from the Court of Appeals within days of when the Court of Appeals receives the appeal notice. So it won't take very long to figure out what's going on. And if one party is, in fact, prejudiced by a few days or a few weeks, the time it takes them to figure out that the case has been appealed, the Court of Appeals has general authority to extend the filing deadlines for extend the briefing schedule.
Anybody else? Representative Wingert?
Christopher?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To help me understand why we have certified mail, if not to create that paper trail, the confirmation that Representative Hanna was talking about, rather than some sworn affidavit by an attorney that he actually said it. I mean, the certified mail provides you with a signed receipt guaranteeing that the person received it. So I guess I am understanding the point about wanting to standardize, but why wouldn't we standardize in the other direction and require the certified
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Wingard, I agree with you. It seems duplicative. If something is sent certified mail, you've got some kind of mail, the statement from the post office that then duplicates the certificate of service in the brief itself. I don't know why that requirement is there. It seems duplicative to me. I don't care, frankly. And why to standardize it in this direction instead of the other direction is because there are a lot fewer appeals to the Court of Appeals from LUBA than there are from Circuit Court. So I think it makes more sense to change LUBA's process to mirror what goes on in Circuit Courts rather than the other way around.
Thank you.
Anything else? Comfort levels?
So may I? How often are the parties involved? And I apologize if you already answered this. I shouldn't ever come by any route other than secret to get here and stop in the hall and talk to anybody. I apologize. How often are the parties involved, like in the Walmart versus Central Point? Neighbors, some sort of neighborhood association versus somebody who's done this a lot and they've got attorneys and it's that their counsel missed the notice versus just sort of some grassroots group who's trying to deal with some issue.
I usually read all the land use decisions that come out of the Court of Appeals and they list who the parties are and who represented them and so on. And there aren't very many cases where a party goes to the Court of Appeals and they don't have a lawyer. We call it a pro se proceeding. People don't go to the Court of Appeals pro se very often. There are a few practitioners out there who do, but they're very experienced. Most parties that go to the Court of Appeals from LUBA do have an attorney.
And this other document called that is already certified that's sent?
Every time you file, an attorney files a pleading, we include what's called a certificate of service, just stapled as the last page, in which I, as the attorney filing the document, certify that I put it in the mail or sent it via email. I certify, above my signature, how I provided that document to the other parties.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they got it. It's you certified the method you sent it, right?
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. And that was Representative Hanna's question. What if the other side doesn't get it? And in this case, the Court of Appeals will immediately start sending out notices to all of the parties. Here's the case name. Here's the case number. Here's the briefing schedule. And so you're going to start getting all this mail from the Court of Appeals. And it won't take you very long to figure out that Representative Hanna appealed that decision.
And the...
So right now we have a situation where other cases that are appealed to the Court of Appeals notify using first-class mail. Mm-hmm. So this bill proposes to bring LUBA cases onto that same standard. It's not within the jurisdiction of this committee to change the way other cases notify on appeals to a certified procedure. If that's what we'd prefer to do, that needs to go through the judiciary process. The question is whether we want to have, continue to have two different ways of notifying for appeal, or whether we want to have one consistent method and line up land use cases basically.
Chair
with
Nolan,
others.
Yeah, and our concern is that it's a gotcha. It's just a gotcha waiting there in the statutes for some unsuspecting practitioner who, you know, follows what is their normal practice, what it would be a reasonable practice to send everybody copies of their appeal notice, and then only find out later that you can't do that. It's just, it's a gotcha waiting there, laying there in the statutes for an unsuspecting practitioner. We would like to correct it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if it's helpful, as a practitioner, I was surprised to see that this rule still exists in the land use context. As a litigator, I'm very familiar with certificates of service that we use to serve parties by first-class mail. It's just the way things are done. And I would be surprised if you heard any members of the bar come and express any concern that that's not a good way to go about things.
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, I promised the committee administrator I'd make that point, and I forgot, so let me follow up on that. This bill passed the Land Use Legislation Committee unanimously. It passed the Executive Committee of the Real Estate and Land Use Section unanimously, and passed the Public Affairs Committee unanimously. Not a single lawyer raised any objection, because as Representative Garrett points out, serving the other parties by first-class mail is simply how it's done.
Thank you. There was a question over on this side. Representative Greenlick.
It's just a comment. I'm certainly going to vote for it because I think having two ways doesn't make sense. But there is a modern world where things are doing different. For example, if I were to send something and I wanted somebody to get and have evidence, I wouldn't send it by certified mail. I'd send it by FedEx. And there are also email ways that are much more where you can get a receipt. I mean, you're right. This is not the committee to revise that sort of stuff, but the fact is I think you're going to bring modern times into this, and this is, I'm surprised you don't have to do with a goose quill or something to
that's next on the next bill.
Sure. I'm a yes.
Wigs are making a big comeback.
Oh, I'm looking up.
I'm sensing some uncertainty on the committee's part, though.
Actually, I'm
okay. The court. Representative Esquivel's okay.
I'm fine.
Thank you. Madam Chair, may I say something?
Yeah, sure.
I really do. I look at this like, you know, we should have a certain deadline, and I don't care if you drop it from an airplane, you go up and hand it to someone or a carrier pigeon. It doesn't matter. As long as they receive that and they know it's in the process, I don't care.
Well, that was one of the frustrations, I think, that Walmart experienced. There was no question the other side's got copies of the petition.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
What does this mean? The court may tax a party that's... Did we get an answer to that? That's new. You mind me asking?
You have another question.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Hannah.
As long as you're here and a member of the bar, line 22...
I thought you were going to ask a personal legal question.
The court may tax a party that unreasonably refuses to stipulate. The court may tax is new. Help us understand that. I don't understand.
I'm sorry, I don't have a copy of the bill in front of me, but I believe that's a subsection in 197.850.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sub 5.
Thank you. I was going to say 4.
Showing off.
Yeah.
I think they're deleting later in the sentence the may be taxed by the court and moving.
Yes. Full disclosure, I think one of the reasons the statute reads the way it did is because...
It was written by Goose Quills. Originally.
I wrote it. I wrote it, yeah. And frankly, I think it was me and John Chandler sitting in my office in legislative council.
So was John.
Neither one of us, you know, have much in the way of litigation experience.
Let's blame him.
And we're like, well, I think this is how you perfect an appeal to the Court of Appeals, so we wrote it that way. And we got it close. You know, in our defense, we got it close, but we missed the first-class mail part. Okay, let me look at and actually respond to the question.
Representative Hannah, before Mr. Crane answers your question, if you'll note at the top of the bill, Legislative Council also noted that they conform language to legislative form and style. So some of the changes are not substantive. They are just re-editing the same concept. And I think the one you're focusing on doesn't change the substance, but re-edits.
Thank you, Chair Nolan. That's correct. This is an editorial change by Legislative Council that doesn't change the substance of the subsection. The subsection deals with sending a copy of the record to the Court of Appeals so that they can look at the record that was developed before the local government. These can often run to many boxes of three-ring binders, some of which is completely irrelevant, and the parties will often stipulate, let's just send the Court of Appeals binders 1 and 4, because because those contain the records that are relevant for this appeal. And that cuts down on the copying cost, the transmission, sending boxes of records from one court building to another. There's an expense in all of that. So this subsection allows the parties to stipulate, we're going to not send the Court of Appeals the whole record. We're only going to send them this little bit. And this allows the Court of Appeals, it's a bit of a hammer, says if anybody unreasonably rejects agreeing to that, the Court of Appeals can charge them for the copying costs and so on.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we should stop now because okay. I think everybody gets it for this moment in time and we should go with it.
I'm okay with that.
Am I reading that correctly?
Got five
final question. Well, we're still in public hearing. We're not moving yet. But
I can wait.
Do you? Yeah.
Do you want to ask Mr. Crane any more questions?
No, I don't think so.
See if he can cite another section of ORS. Okay. Is there anyone else here to testify on Senate Bill 234? No one else in the audience? We'll close the public hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 234. Representative Clem, did you have a question? Comment?
Yeah, a comment. I think because of the general represented status of parties in these things, it's probably not enough for me to say I can't support this bill, but I'll have another bill that may come here. It has to do with people who live in mobile home park subdivisions and a land use process that, because they technically aren't property owners, they receive no notice that their homes were about to be turned into lots and then their rent raised and told to either buy at quite a high price or live under the new rent raising, and now most are moving and selling for great losses. And they don't have a lawyer. It's a land use process, so it's really the city in considering a permit to make a mobile home park subdivision under statute only sent notices to the landowners, and they don't own land, they rent. They own the house, but not the land. So that's where I get weird about needing to know whether these kind of renters and neighborhood groups get noticed. And I think in these cases, because they're in court, unless they're just totally representing themselves, it's likely they would have an attorney who would get these other filings or do their homework. But that's some of my heartburn.
Okay.
Yeah. The other is that my mother-in-law was told she was dead, apparently. She's not, but she was told she was dead by her insurance company, and they said, we sent you a letter saying you're dead, aren't you? And it never came, and we paid $50,000 out of pocket because they refused coverage, saying she had died when she, as a matter of fact, did not.
She's sure she's not dead, right?
Yeah, she's pretty certain, I think. Yeah, she told me that yesterday.
Good. Okay. This bill adds first-class mail to the other possibilities for service, as I read it. You can send it, if this bill passes, you can send it by registered or certified mail, which you're allowed to now. We add first-class. We do not take away either of the other two. The other thing that is important, I think, the point Representative Hanna raised in line 22, this bill does not create any new authority of the court to assess a party for additional costs. It simply moves that part of the sentence. It makes it an active verb instead of a passive verb. So it does not create any new authority to assess a fee or a tax. Just so we're clear about that. Further discussion during work session.
Madam Chair.
Representative, yes.
Just to make sure, that addition of the first class option gives a tool that doesn't have a paper trail. That's the key question, I think. The other two in statute have a guaranteed paper trail.
Well, what I heard Representative Garrett and Mr. Crane say is that actually the legal profession believes there is a paper trail. It's called the declaration or whatever that piece that they sign. And, they're not willing. I mean, I can't imagine a lawyer who would put at risk his or her membership in the bar for falsifying that statement. So I think if that's their practice, yes, there may be more modern ways of doing it, but this is what we have. So what shall we do?
Madam Chair.
Representative Garrett.
I move Senate Bill 234 to the floor. Be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrett moves Senate Bill 234 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Okay. Any objections? Seeing none? Motion carries. Do we want to...
Consent calendar.
Well, I was just wondering whether our colleagues would love to have the opportunity for this kind of enlightenment that we have just had.
Consent calendar.
I don't think so. I don't know.
I would not recommend that based on what it had in the Senate. I mean, it had...
You don't want consent, or you want it?
I would not, just based on the way it came through the Senate committee and...
There was one no vote in committee. I didn't see the House, the floor vote in the Senate.
There were several.
Were there?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Hannah, then.
Wow. No good deed goes unpunished.
I'm paying.
Who wants to carry this bill, then?
Vice Chair Garrett.
I'll carry it.
Thank you. That's right. You're the lawyer on the committee.
Right.
You
He's the one that said it.
You remember the bar.
Necessity.
Representative Garrett will carry that bill for us. We're going to close that work session. Open. It does? No. We had no objections. I asked for objections.
Yep, you're correct. I'm wrong.
So it passed unanimously. And I just opened a public hearing on House Bill.
And Chair, not everybody was here, so I think you may want to record the absence on that by taking a roll call.
Representative Esquivel is excused.
Yeah, but shouldn't that show in the count?
It will. It will.
That he was excused.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Or we can reopen and allow him the opportunity to vote.
That's fine. I don't. That's true. He had told me ahead of time that he had a commitment that he could not change because it involved others. And so I'm happy to have him excused. If he comes back and wants to vote, I'm fine with that, too.
Would you mind if we reopened the hearing?
Only if you're going to carry this bill, Representative.
I just wanted to lighten the mood.
Okay, House Bill 2230. We are dealing with the tough issues facing Oregon today. Ms. Ross?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I've read it three times while you guys...
House Bill 2230 excludes from the definition of land use decision both state agency permits and compatibility statements issued by local governments that are based on or consistent with prior local approval of substantially the same use. Also directs the Land Conservation and Development Department update and improve coordination of land use decision-making between state agencies and local governments.
Senate Bill 234 was just a warm-up, folks.
Yes, we're really hoping someone can put this in English.
Mr. Whitman wants to talk to us about this. And then I've got two other people on the sign-up sheet that we'll get to after the department has a chance to... We're a little punchy this afternoon. Mr. Whitman, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, no apologies necessary. For the record, Richard Whitman, the Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. My voice is not in good shape, so if I'm losing any of you, please just let me know. I'm here today to testify concerning House Bill 2230, which is an agency bill. And it's an agency bill that, in light of your discussion of the prior bill, appears quite technical, but it actually involves a fairly important aspect of our state land use program, and that's coordination between state agency and local land use decisions. We've got essentially two parallel universes out there in the regulatory world between state government and local government. And back when our founding fathers set up the land use program in Senate Bill 100 in 1973, they put in place a requirement that state agencies make decisions in a manner that is compatible with local land use plans. So they were thinking ahead to require state agencies to not act in conflict with local comprehensive plans. And over the years, as the land use program has evolved, there were a series of court cases and disputes between state agencies and local governments, with some state agencies making decisions that local governments really felt were not compatible with local comprehensive plans. And that led to some additional requirements that were put in place in the 1980s. And one of those requirements was a requirement for something that is now commonly known as a land use compatibility statement, or a LUX. That is a major tool for assuring that state agencies make decisions in a manner that is compatible with local comprehensive plans. So how does that all work, and why do we need this bill now? We've had... Let me talk about how it works first, just very briefly. Obviously, if a local government is making a land use decision about a particular use first, we have a fairly simple situation. Local government makes a permit decision, decides that something is okay under its comprehensive plan or not, and then the state agency can follow that decision and rely on that decision. We also have situations, however, where in some cases state agencies go before local governments in making a permitting decision, and that's where we tend to have more problems, is where the state agency is going first. Sometimes there are good reasons for doing that. Sometimes it's simply a matter of an applicant forcing the state agency permitting process to trigger first before a local government makes its land use decision. There's no real rhyme or reason to it. So the problems that have arisen recently with this land use coordination system, we've had a number of situations where there have been multiple appeals of what are effectively the same decision. So, for instance, we'll have a local government make a land use decision approving a particular use. Then there's a state agency that is looking whether to issue a permit or not. It sends in the land use compatibility form to a local government. The local government will say, yes, that is compatible, or no with our plan. And then we have another appeal. So we have an appeal at times of the initial land use decision by a local government, and then we have a second appeal of a land use compatibility statement that's issued in a response to a request from a state agency. So Section 2 of this bill, which is the first operative section of the bill, is intended to get at that problem of multiple appeals and basically say, if the local government has already made a land use decision to say that something is allowed, its subsequent issuance of a land use compatibility statement concerning the same use is not a separate land use decision that is appealable. And conversely, for state agency actions, the state agency action is not appealable as a land use decision either if the local government has already issued a permit for that particular use. So that's what Section 2 does. This is a good government efficiency measure to cut down on what are really unnecessary appeals in the land use system and assure better coordination between state and local government. Section 3, which is the other main operative provision of the bill, has a couple of housekeeping provisions in it, but it also has two substantive provisions. One of those would authorize the Land Conservation and Development Commission to by rule, require that a local government go first in this sequencing issue. Is a general matter. I think we believe that normally the normal course should be local government makes the land use decision first, state agency then makes the permit decision second. We realize, though, that you couldn't have a blanket rule that says that. There are some situations where it is appropriate for the state agency to go first. There also are some situations, frankly, where there's no local land use decision at all. It may be a use that's not regulated at all by the local land use regulations. So this in Section 3, it would authorize LCDC to do some rulemaking to try to gain some more efficiency and improve the sequencing between state agency decisions and local decisions after consulting with local government and with state agencies. And then the final substantive provision is essentially legislative direction to the agency to update the state agency coordination programs that exist for each state agency in terms of how they're assuring that their actions are compatible with local comprehensive plans and land use regulations. Many of those programs were adopted 1990 or before and have not been looked at for 20 years now. And we would like the blessing of the legislature to start a measured, consistent with existing resources process of bringing those up to date. The Department of State Lands recently did complete an update of its program in 2006. That's the most recent one. And there have been a few updates over the last 20 years, but there are a number of agencies, again, who have had no update for the last 20 years. So that's House Bill 2230. We believe it's a bill that makes some good government fixes to what's a good government program in terms of assuring efficiency and coordination between state and local government. It does not fix every single problem that comes up in this program. We are aware that there's still going to be the possibility of LUBA appeals in some situations where they don't appear to make sense, but we work closely with an informal working group of local government partners in coming up with this legislation. We believe it's a good step in the right direction. Be happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Representative Wingert.
Mr. Whitman, are we talking about, just help me understand, are we talking about, when you say state agency permits, are these permits to allow state government to do something? Is this government to government, or are we talking about private sector things that need a state permit? I'm a little confused myself.
Chair Nolan, Representative Wingard, it's both. So it is both state agency regulatory decisions on permits being issued to third parties, private parties, and it also includes state agency actions, direct actions that may affect land use. Both of those types of actions are subject to the coordination program.
So, Mr. Whitman, I just checked with the administrator. We don't yet have a fiscal statement on this, so we won't be moving this bill today. I had thought maybe we would get the fiscal. We've asked for it. I would actually think that that might show some, if not some cost savings, some benefits for applicants by, first of all, clarifying the process, but even removing a step. Am I reading this right?
Chair Nolan, I think that's correct. I think clarifying for everybody when you need to file an appeal if you have a problem with decisions being made either by the state agency or by local government certainly will cut down on cost, and it's intended, designed to cut down on cost for local government. Probably will result in efficiencies for private sector and is also designed to make things more efficient for state agencies.
Good. Any other questions? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In Section 1, Subsection 4B, updated regularly, what's that term? What's the definition?
Chair Nolan, Representative Hanna, there is no definition of updated regularly. I think what we're looking for here is, again, a sense of direction from the legislature that we shouldn't be going 20 years without having updates of these programs. It's too important in terms of having state and local government on the same page to go that long. Obviously, this is going to have to be consistent with resources, and we're in a tough time right now, so what might be regular right now may be a bit longer than if we get back into a more easy situation fiscally. But so I don't think there's any hard and set definition.
Okay. Anything else? Representative Wingert?
Maybe I'm dumb as a post, but I just want to come back to this. I want to make sure that I understand what the intent of this bill is. Are we talking about permitting in general, or are we talking about government-to-government relationships? I mean, I see in the summary the last sentence is directs LCDC to update and improve coordination of land use decision making between state agencies and local government. And again, that's just the normal planning that goes on between the two to service some third party who's looking for a land use permit, or are we talking about the state Department of Revenue or the State Department of Fish and Wildlife wanting to do something and needing some permit to move forward?
Chair Nolan, Representative Wingard, so let me try to give you a little bit more detail on what types of decisions we might be talking about. And I'll use, I'm not picking on my sister agency or Department of Fish and Wildlife, but I'll use them as an example, just because one of the early cases on this program involved that agency. So a decision by the Department of Fish and Wildlife to apply a, I believe it was an herbicide in Tillamook Bay, dealing with an invasive species, was challenged as not being compatible with Tillamook County's comprehensive plan, which had provisions dealing with management of the estuary. So that's a direct action by the Department of Fish and Wildlife to manage a resource which they're responsible for managing. You could also have decisions by, so Department of Fish and Wildlife also regulates fish passage and has to approve waivers in some situations for fish passage and other. Chair Nolan, did you have a...
I wanted to make sure we understood the example.
Yes.
In the example with the Fish and Wildlife in Tillamook Bay, how would the procedure be different if this bill becomes law than it is under current law?
All right, let me, Chair Nolan, let me slow down a little bit and go through that. Under this bill, if Tillamook County regulated the application of that herbicide under its land use regulations, and that's an if, maybe they do, maybe they don't, but if they do, and they had issued a permit of some form to approve that action by the Department of Fish and Wildlife, then when the Department of Fish and Wildlife is itself preparing to undertake that activity and ask for a land use compatibility statement from Tillamook County, that issuance of the land use compatibility statement would not be a second land use decision that could be challenged. If somebody wanted to challenge the county's sign-off, they would have had to have done that at the time of the county's approval of a permit.
It's double jeopardy, kind of.
That's right. It's you have one opportunity to challenge this. Department of Fish and Wildlife might also issue various types of permits to third parties to, before they can undertake activities, and the same rule would apply there. If it's somebody who's building a small dam and they need a waiver of fish passage from ODFW, if that's something that the local county regulated under their land use regulations and the county had already signed off on that through a permitting process, then the county's issuance of a land use compatibility statement for that permit by Fish and Wildlife would not trigger a second opportunity to file a land use appeal.
Okay, that helps. Representative Garrett, Representative Wigert, did that get your issues?
Mostly.
Okay, good. Representative Garrett.
So is it fair to say this is just taking away multiple bites at the apple? We're not removing substantive rights of challenge. We are just, it's really a matter of timing. We're letting people retain all the rights they currently have, but they must do it once and earlier.
Chair Nolan, Representative Garrett, that's correct.
Okay.
It is requiring people to make that appeal at their first opportunity.
Thank you.
Mr. Whitman, is it fair for us to assume that you have worked, that your department has worked with either the Association of Oregon Counties or the League of Oregon Cities or both to coordinate the language as it applies to local governments?
So, Chair Nolan, we have not worked formally with AOC and LOC. We've worked with an informal work group made up primarily of county planning directors on this issue, and I believe you're going to hear from one county planning director about this as well. Most of the issues arise in counties rather than cities.
And you're right, I do have one planning director signed up. I have AOC and LOC in the room, but they are keeping their powder dry for now.
Yep.
Anything else for Mr. Whitman?
Thank you,
Mr. Whitman. I hope you'll stick around in case there are other questions. I have two people who've signed up to testify on this bill, Austin McGeegan and Stephen Kafori. Come on up. Mr. McGeegan?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Austin McGeegan, and I'm the Director of Community Development Department for Polk County, and I'm here on behalf of the Association of Oregon County Planning Directors. And the Department of Land Conservation and Development has worked with two members of the Association of County Planning Directors in the informal work group, and they were unable to attend, and they asked me to come and express my support and also to express a concern. And I'll start with the support. My colleagues believe that this bill goes a long ways in improving efficiency, and that it eliminates the two bites at the apple that can lead to unnecessary appeals, additional unnecessary appeals to the Land Use Board of Appeals. And we really appreciate the effort that has gone into this. The only concern that I'm here to express is under the definition of land use decision. And my colleagues would appreciate some additional clarity to clarify that a land use decision does not include a decision of a local government that a proposed state agency action that requires the LUCs complies with the goals and is compatible with the acknowledged comp plan and land use regulations implementing the plan if the use or activity is allowed without review under the acknowledged comp plan and land use regulations implementing the plan. So here in that scenario is if a use is outright permitted and doesn't require any review at the local level, that it's clarified in the statute that the checking of the land use compatibility statement that says it is that the activity is compatible is not in itself a land use decision that's appealable. And that's the comment that I have.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McGeegan? Okay. Mr. Kafori?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. The sign says, please summarize your testimony, so I'll be very brief. We support this bill. We think that we've listened to the committee talk and express its concern over and over again about the complexity of the land use system, and this is a way to reduce some of that complexity.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Klim.
That last statement you made, wasn't that one of the Big Look recommendations?
Can we do something, Madam Chair? Representative Klim, what was
that
one of the recommendations?
Reducing the complexity.
Madam Chair, Representative Klim, I agree. I think it was.
Hey, we got an answer on at least one sub-point for somebody. Is that Representative Garrett who's collecting these things?
Yes. Any other questions for Mr. Kafori? Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. We don't have a fiscal. We can't move it. Never mind.
No, I'm afraid we are not allowed.
Too excited.
So are there issues that committee members need to resolve before we take this up on Thursday? Is there something we should be worried about, Mr. Whitman?
For the record, Richard Whitman again for Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development. Just a brief comment on the concern expressed by Planning Director McGeegan from Polk County. The department doesn't oppose the language that has been suggested for Section 2. of House Bill 2230. I do want to express a slight concern with that language, that there not be an unanticipated outcome as a result of that. The concern is this, that a decision by a local government that a particular use is not regulated under their land use regulations, if it's not a land use, if we say, take that off the table and say that's not a land use decision, that's fine. We're doing that for state agencies down below also. What that does, though, at the local government level, any decision by a government entity is always going to be appealable one way or another. It's just a question of how that appeal could be made. So, in this case, by making that decision not a land use decision, you probably would be making it possible for somebody who wanted to challenge that decision that a particular use is not regulated under the local land use regulations, something that could be appealed to circuit court through a procedure called a writ of review. It may be that the counties prefer and cities prefer to have these decisions challenged in that way. It's not really an issue of state concern, but I just, for the record, just to be clear with everyone, I don't want you to go away thinking that just by making it not a land use decision, you're not making it not appealable. How many negatives can I put in? I'm sorry. So I hope that doesn't confuse the committee members, but I just wanted to make that one point. Again, we wouldn't oppose an amendment along those lines. I think it's consistent with the overall thrust of the bill.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. We have another witness who'd like to testify. Ms. Lynch.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I had not intended to testify because I like reducing complexity, too. But I am concerned about the latter, the comment by the Polk County Planning Director, that there be one bite at the apple and that it be a bite least taken. Instead of having to go to a court of appeals, going to LUBA, which is what a land use decision allows you to do, is a different and more comfortable opportunity for citizens. It creates a different set of requirements, a different set of ability for citizens to do that. So although I agree with the concept of reducing multiple bites, particularly for just procedural issues and not for substantive issues, it is important that there be an opportunity. And if by changing the wording via the Polk County Planning Director's discussion, that changes citizen opportunities.
Mm. Thank you. Questions of Ms. Lynch? Okay. Thank you. Seeing no further witnesses. Yes, Representative Cowan.
I have a question that anyone who could answer.
I bet I couldn't.
Who has testified before us today? But I think that I heard a recommendation for an amendment that would change language, and you had mentioned Thursday, so now I'm confused whether we're expecting amendments to address the issue that was raised by the Polk County Planning Director.
I heard a request for a change. I also heard some concern that that hasn't been fully worked out. I think the bill has merit without the amendment, and I think that's what Mr. McGuigan said, that it has value to the county planning directors, but that they might want to see additional value added. But I also heard two witnesses say that, well, we're not so sure that there isn't something unintended there.
And I'm just seeking clarity, and I'm seeing head nodding that it could go forward without amendments being proposed.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you for allowing me to watch the head nod.
That's a new standard. Since we do not have a fiscal, we are not moving this bill today, but we have already posted a work session for this bill for Thursday. in anticipation that that might be the case. So we'll probably act on this bill on Thursday. I'm going to close the public hearing, and unless there is further business for us today, Representative, would you like to vote on Senate Bill 234? The chair asks unanimous consent to reopen the work session on Senate Bill 234. Seeing no objections, I'm going to reopen the work session on 234. The chair asks unanimous consent to allow Representative Esquivel to vote on Senate Bill 234. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. Motion still passes. We're going to close the work session, and we're adjourned.